Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, if you will, travel back in time with me to the year 1992.
Okay.
How many shirts did you own that were decorated with fabric paint, puff paint?
So 1992, I would have been like 15 or 16, so not that many, though we did make them as like a, school spirit type thing once, if I recall.
Okay. So the fact that fabric paint has gone extinct, I had like so many shirts that had fabric. We would do it at like birthday parties, you know, like.
That makes sense.
This is a way for kids to just like keep their hands to themselves for, you know, half an hour or whatever. But they've pretty much gone extinct. You don't see puff paint shirts around anymore.
No, though I do spend a fair amount of time at Joann Fabrics, and it all does still exist.
Okay. Well, something tells me that there was something wrong with it, though. Like, why did it go away?
Like red M&Ms?
Yeah. Oh, did red M&Ms go away?
No, remember they did because they had, like, red dye number 7 in them or whatever, and then they brought them back, I guess, with some more tolerable dye.
Okay. Because here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the puff paints of the 90s contain some ingredients that are eventually going to give me superpowers.
Like make you glow?
Yeah. I would hope for superpowers over cancer, although cancer tends to happen more with toxic chemicals than superpowers, unfortunately.
I mean, as long as you didn't huff them, maybe you're okay.
Yeah, I didn't. I was not a craft supply huffer as a child. So I'm hoping that everything will turn out okay. All right, let's get to the show. This week, we are joined by J. Smith Cameron and Naomi Ekperigin to tackle the following questions. What is Justice Gorsuch's problem? Is Succession actually the funniest show on TV? How much of an acting challenge is it to talk dirty to a Culkin? What is a pick-me? And why are we suddenly afraid of male surgeons? All this and more right now. Okay, Alyssa, have you gotten COVID yet?
In theory, had COVID in April of 2020, but there were no tests, so we'll never know.
Right. You know, I haven't gotten COVID.
Yeah, I'm knocking on my head, which we will consider wood right now.
I haven't gotten COVID during the time that we were aware that a person could get COVID, but I did get really sick in December of 2019 at the very end of the month. And like, I never get sick. I was a filthy child. Like dirty outdoor kid.
Right.
For whatever reason, I've always had a pretty good immune system, but I was like knocked on my ass for a couple of days at the end of December 2019. So I wonder if that was it.
Could have been.
Because if it wasn't it, I feel very vulnerable. Even though I'm triple vaxxed, I feel like it's coming for me.
I mean, it's like, look, did the fact that I had it in April of 2020, potentially, does it even mean anything 2 years later at this point?
I don't know.
That's part of the problem.
It used to be that like having COVID was something that was kind of like, oh no, they've got, you know, what did they do to get COVID? But now it's like, I just feel like the Omicron variant just sort of lights on whoever it feels like it wants to, you know, like I have a friend from college who she and her family, all of them tested before they got together for Christmas. Every single one of them was negative. They got together for Christmas. They were the only people that they saw were each other, went home, like they all had COVID.
Right.
Like somehow Omicron snuck in there. So I just feel like it's, if I haven't had it already, it's coming for me.
I feel the same. I'm just trying to be as safe as I can. I mean, it's like I've made it this far, literally only hanging out with myself. So what's a few more months, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of am worried that I've lost the ability to hang out with people. We've been inside for so long.
When people talk about making plans, I get real stressed. Like I got an invitation to someone's birthday party in February with all the bells and whistles. Must be vaxxed, less than 10 people, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, really? Is this something that might have to happen? But I mean, I guess at some point, but I don't really know how I'll do when I have to be around more than one person.
I mean, I don't blame you. As of January 12th, the 7-day moving average of daily new cases was 782,766. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah, that was an increase of 33% compared to the previous 7-day moving average. There's a lot of people with COVID right now. I think officials are speculating that in some places it's even peaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because at this point, it's like everyone would have either is going to get it, basically. It's right. just going to be, you know, the numbers of people who have yet to get it are lower than the people who have already gotten it. Which is, you know, it's a little kind of a relief. You know, we hope we don't get another variant.
I guess so. But as long as so many people still aren't vaccinated, the threat of another variant is so real. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what's like the selfishness of people who still haven't been vaxxed. It's like, you know, and the idea too that so many people say, well, Omicron is mild. It's mm-hmm. it's more mild. There are still some people who are really, really sick from it, mm-hmm. and people who are double vaxxed and boosted. And so, you know, I just feel like there's still a bit of a road ahead, even if mm-hmm. some places are peaking, because there's still huge parts of the country with really low vaccination rates that haven't really gotten hit yet. And I feel mm-hmm. like when they do, it won't be good. I think like as of 2 days ago, there were no ICU beds left in the entire state of Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
I feel like, you know, coming from a rural area, I feel like when COVID first started, because it hit the cities first, because mm-hmm. higher population density, I feel like people in rural areas thought that they were going to not have to worry about it. Like it didn't right. apply to them. And it does apply to them, because everything that affects – almost everything that affects cities also applies to them. Crime applies to them, even though right. they think that crime is exclusive. They're going to get it. And the thing that worries me about rural areas with a lot of unvaccinated people, like where I'm from, and like much of Oklahoma, is that while the outbreaks won't be as large in terms of numbers because there's fewer people, the resources available right. to help the people when they get sick are – really, really sparse. Like the closest hospital to my hometown is a half an hour highway drive away, country driving, not
right.
city driving, half an hour drive away. And they don't have very many beds. I had a friend's mother got very sick with COVID last year, and she had to be flown to one of the Dakotas for a hospital bed.
Shit.
Across the entire state of Minnesota. Like it's just, it worries me. But, you know, it's sort of like at this point, everyone's kind of in the fuck it phase.
I know. I'm not yet. I'm not.
I can't be, because I don't want my baby to get COVID.
Right.
Which would be a nightmare. But yeah, it feels like everybody's kind of in the fuck it phase. I feel like the CDC revising the isolation period down from 10 days to 5 days kind of spooked a few people, because it seemed like that was just made to serve capitalism rather than made to serve public health.
Right. Or the alternative is that it could have been 5 days all along. Right.
And which this is was, like,
I know, but like you get the crazy anti-vaxxer and COVID deniery people who are like, it gives some fuel to their crazy fire. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. But one kind of small silver lining of this week, a government website worked.
It did.
Holy
it
shit.
It did.
Do you want to talk about it, Alyssa?
I was able to order my tests, my free COVID tests, from the USPS website. It was one step. It was very easy. And I thank you, USPS, because I also then watched this morning the burden that this is going to put on the USPS. And it was pretty incredible to see sort of the warehouses they already have set up where they're just waiting for the tests to arrive, and then they will start shipping them out. And luckily, this happened right when some of their holiday carriers, like their contract folks, were still around. So they were able to bring them back to help deliver and package these tests and get them to us.
Wow. It's almost like we really need the Postal Service to function.
We really need the Postal Service.
I just wish they would deliver me fewer flyers for grocery stores that like are two neighborhoods over that I'm never going to go to. Like, I don't care if grapes are on sale. I'm not going all the way over there. Yeah, I was actually really surprised by how smooth it was. So smooth. One page. I mean,
we just got to see if they come now.
Yeah. I guess like this, you know, a lot of people were talking about this yesterday. I guess this is a testament to how many people will actually use government services if the tech yeah. behind them actually
Good point.
Works.
Good point.
Let that be a lesson. The tech should work.
Tech first.
Yeah. Oh, we have a lot of stuff to get to in the show today, so we can't talk news for too long, but we do have a sort of we have a controversy to talk. We're going to teach mm-hmm. the controversy. We have a fuck that guy. A real important fuck that guy.
Yes.
It's today's fuck that guy is Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. So we're recording this on Wednesday. This is a developing story. Which
breaking,
breaking story. Nina Totenberg reported on Tuesday that the Chief Justice had asked all of the Supreme Court justices to wear masks out of respect for Sonia Sotomayor. Justice Sotomayor has diabetes, which puts her at a more vulnerable place for severe COVID infection, even though she's, I'm assuming, vaccinated. So according to Totenberg's reporting, only Neil Gorsuch refused. And because of his refusal, Sotomayor has to participate in arguments and conference remotely.
Right.
So that's an extreme fuck that guy to Neil Gorsuch.
Extreme? Like, why didn't he have to go remote?
Yeah, seriously.
Seriously.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Yes. Neil Gorsuch should have had to go remote.
But now, Aaron, tee up. Okay, now tee up the controversy.
So today, Justices Sotomayor and Gorsuch released a joint statement, a suspicious joint statement. This is the statement. Reporting that Justice Sotomayor asked Justice Gorsuch to wear a mask surprised us. It is false. While we may sometimes disagree about the law, we are warm colleagues and friends. Recall that Nina Totenberg's reporting didn't say that Sotomayor asked Gorsuch to wear a mask. Said that Chief Justice Roberts asked Gorsuch to wear a mask.
Sus.
Legalese. These judges Sus. With their weaselly legally language. What do you think about this? Do you think that the statement is true, or do you think that Totenberg's reporting is true?
So look, we know Nina doesn't fuck around. So it's Totenberg really, really hard to imagine that she would have reported something that wasn't like very sourced and confirmed. And yeah. It feels like maybe John Roberts was a little bit like, fucking get this shit together. People are losing faith in us as an institution. They can't think that like this is happening amongst us. I feel like that's maybe what happened. But yeah, I gotta say it would be really just beyond belief to think that Nina Totenberg had run a story that was false.
Yeah. Nina Totenberg has been in the Supreme Court for more hours than Justice Gorsuch has.
Correct.
She has been reporting on the Supreme Court for longer than almost every member of the Supreme Court has been there.
Do you remember when it was sort of the beginning of COVID and it came out that she might get laid off at NPR because of just, you know, everything that was happening, and like the internet went crazy and every like smart legal person was like, whoa, 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 whoa. There's got to be a better way to like cut costs than this.
Right. I mean, she's a national treasure, a great reporter. I don't think Totenberg was lying. I think Roberts is vain.
We stand by her reporting.
We stand by Nina Totenberg's reporting. We don't know anything. We have no background information. No
we know nothing.
We just believe that Nina Totenberg is telling the truth.
Sometimes we're witches and using our witchcraft. Just going
to
say.
Yeah. I think that's a fair way to come to conclusions about facts regarding the news.
I think so, too.
Okay, we have one thing that we thought was going to be a toast, but it's actually fuck that guy.
It's like 25% toast.
It's right? twists and turns, right?
It's so sad when we get excited about something and we're texting about it and then we're like, sad trombone. Oh. Wah, wah. Wah, wah.
Okay, so yesterday we were like, oh my goodness, this guy is based. Wow. The University of Alabama head coach and West Virginia native Nick Saban.
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban, the football guy, was one of the people who signed onto a letter urging Joe Manchin to pass the Freedom to Vote John R. Lewis Act, which is something that is not going to pass because of Joe Manchin.
Correct.
But Nick Saban was trying to encourage him to pass it. But then we were like, yay, Coach Saban, great.
Record scratch.
Great. Yeah, record scratch. Upon closer look, there's a footnote from Saban. Coach Saban is not in favor of getting rid of the filibuster in the Senate. He believes this will destroy the checks and balances we must have in our democracy. Stick to sports, dude. I went from...
Like, he didn't have to have a take on the filibuster.
Also, like, nobody needs to have... That filibuster is ridiculous. Like, anybody who's like, my filibuster has been completely bamboozled by the right-wing media that needs the filibuster to exist so that their red state people can derail a progressive agenda for the rest of the country who wants positive change. Like... you fucking dweeb. You don't care. Like, you don't get anybody who's like, save the filibuster deserves to get a wedgie.
That was like one of our funnier texts. It's like, wait, what? Wait, what? Nick Saban has a take on the filibuster? What, did somebody ask him? It's like, how did this all happen?
Oh, you know what? If Nick Saban has a take on the filibuster, let's ask Bernie Sanders if he has a take on, you know,
Roll Tide.
Different offensive strategies for the Alabama Crimson Tide. I mean, but I mean, they did lose the national championship this year to Georgia. So maybe Bernie Sanders could be an
Maybe he could help.
I don't know. It's so dumb. I don't even think about Nick Saban, except when I see him on TV and I'm like, oh, he's looking old.
He's been around forever.
Yeah. Wow. He's kind of like one of those, he's like one of those sportscasters that never ages.
Totally.
Like the Gumbels.
Did I ever tell you I wanted to go to Alabama?
What? Why?
To college. Yeah. My mom just told me. She's like, I don't think they'd like you at all, Alyssa. I don't think you'd make any friends there. And I was like, huh, that's so weird. I don't know why. I just thought it was interesting.
Huh. Well, Alabama is a physically beautiful state.
It is physically beautiful.
That is politically troubled. And that's the end of that. I don't want to get angry mail from Alabama. Anyway, okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. J. Smith Cameron, a.k.a. Jerry from Succession, is joining us.
You guys, I cannot believe that I'm sitting here with you. You are like,
oh, we're so excited.
We are so excited.
I'm a big groupie.
Oh.
Oh, well, we're groupies.
Oh, the groupiedom is mutual. Like,
yes.
It could not be more mutual.
I would like to interview you two at some point.
Oh, I would let you. I don't have anything.
Okay. Yeah. So, what are you doing tomorrow?
And welcome back. This is Hysteria. And the day has finally come. Joining us today is a Hysteria icon and really a cultural icon. She's a Broadway veteran and stars as fan favorite Jerry on Succession. It's J. Smith Cameron.
Hello, everybody.
So happy to have you today. Let's get started with the important stuff. Did you ever expect to be a sex symbol at this point in your career?
Not at all at any point in my career, particularly. So, no. It's sort of surreal. Yesterday, I was going to meet my friend at a bar. And on my way, I passed like three young men and they're like, hey, Jerry.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I was like, whoa.
Like, how young are we talking? Like, under 30?
No, like in their 30s, I guess. I don't know. I'm really bad at that. But I get that a lot where I'll pass like I think women recognize me too, but they don't blurt it out, you know?
Oh, I would blurt it out.
Hot.
Yeah.
Well, women, I'm generalizing horribly, but women will be sort of politely like, they won't interrupt you in the middle of something. You know, they tend to be more like, oh, I just wanted to say I watch your show or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't mind the young men going, hey, Jim. Harry.
Oh my gosh, that sounds like such a trip. So Jerry's role was originally written to be played by a man, which would have been boring, in my opinion. When you tried out for the role, was it the role that you tried out for? Like, how did it become for a woman?
That's a really good question. I don't know that I know exactly, except Doug Abel, who was casting in season one, who has cast me before and cast some of my husband's movies. So I knew him a little bit. And he called me and he said, I know that the character is written as a man. It was Jerry. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're just sort of thought maybe we should see some women for the part. But then much later, I ran into Doug and he was like, no, I had a real idea to call you in. Like, but so I don't know what happened, but I went on tape. And, you know, it had not been rewritten for a woman yet. I mean, not that it was subtly, you could kind of tell because the crude way the men speak to each other on the show. Well, everyone speaks to each other now, but at that point it seemed to me to be written to be among men. Like it was kind of very crude put downs and crude vulgar language and without any awareness that they were talking to an older woman, you know, the other mm-hmm. characters. So I just went with it because I thought it would be really funny if she was sort of unflappable, but at the same time, just routinely disgusted with them. Like they were just ridiculous, figures of ridicule for her. So I just weathered all the insulting things, like with just the slightest wince that became a real Jerry thing going forward, right? Like her rolling her eyes or her like, ugh, that thing happens constantly, became sort of a thing. And I think I remember doing that in my audition. And I remember Doug giggling and Jesse wasn't in the room. It was just, I just went on tape. And then they decided to meet people in the room. They were going to meet some women for it. They called me back, I guess you would say, but I couldn't go because my mother had passed away. And I was literally in Virginia. It was her memorial. And I said, listen, I would really like to be considered for the role, but I can't come back in and meet them. I just, you know, even if they waited, I don't think I'm in any shape to go in and meet people this week. So it just turned out, you know, I guess they just went with the tape. And I think they'd seen the film Margaret that mm-hmm. I have a big role in, and Kieran is in it, and Jeannie Berlin is in it. They've cast a few people for Margaret, mm-hmm. one of my husband's movies.
Oh, cool.
So I think that might have also been material that they considered, or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Well, okay. So just, this is a kind of big question. What iconic role that was written for a man do you think you could knock out of the park?
Oh, snap.
Stage or screen?
Well, you know, everyone wants to do Hamlet, and I'm a little long in the tooth for that. I'm putting that, but maybe Iago.
Ooh.
Or Shylock.
Ooh.
Those are both the villainous. I love Hamlet part, but that's such a, almost like a sacred cow. Like no one can really check all the boxes with that part. It seems in my experience, it's so great. It's so rich. And it's really kind of a gender fluid kind of part. A lot of women had played that part. And if it was written today, he probably would be non-binary, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a university student and he's in culture shock going back to his castle where his parents are. And he's horrified by the morality. So it's very pertinent to now.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to see that.
Okay. So here, one, congratulations, because Succession is being nominated again for all the awards this season. And the thing that Aaron and I have talked about is that, like, Succession's always nominated under drama, which is technically what it is, but it's funnier than most of the comedies that we watch. It's very dark. It's very fucked up. Why do we think it is so funny? We should be repelled by the characters, yet I find myself rooting for each one of you in a different way.
Oh, I know. That's interesting. I don't know. I remember when I did my first table read, because there was no Jerry character in the pilot and they had shot that months before. Right. So when we read, I guess the first two in the room, Jerry's part of the story, the Waystar part of the story particularly, seemed very cloak and dagger and kind of lots of insults and the family drama, which is so Greek and so Shakespearean and all that, that wasn't where my head was because I was not in that part of the story at that time. And so I remember asking him, is this a comedy or a drama? And he was like, yes. And he said to me, a really good piece is both. Like, so I think it's sort of arbitrary to him. I know that that central drama between the siblings seems to me what Jesse's most passionately interested in. And that everything else, the corruption and the world of it behind it is, you know, bleak. And I think he is also making a huge commentary, like a political and social satire of, you know, people who are just filthy rich and don't think about other people, don't care about other people and are grasping and backstabbing and all of that. And I think it's very clearly a put down of those people. But what you said, Alyssa, is true. Like, people do kind of like the characters, and that invites a lot of, like, why are we liking these characters? They're horrible. But I mean, I think that's the nature of satire, you know, like, if you don't have some way you buy into the people, you just turn off, don't you? You don't pay attention right. to the story at all. Like, they're anti-hero, like Jeremy's character and Kieran's character. They're sort of anti-heroes. They're horrible, but you know, they're trying, they're striving. And I think characters that are striving are just really appealing. Like I said, I wanted to play Iago. Like, that's a terrible person, but he's striving for something, you know? And I think that is just one of those things we're fascinated by in all of drama, whether it's dramatic or comedic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of, Kieran, how did the Roman and Jerry sub-dom relationship come about? That's one of my favorite parts of the show. It's like so fucking funny, but also extremely intense at the same time. Yeah. How do you go through those scenes with him without breaking?
Well, we do sometimes. It was, you know, I feel like it started with this kind of really uncomfortable thing for me to be, you know, he was pursuing her. And then I was like, well, how does Jerry feel about this? she'd be way too careful. Even if she was wildly excited and wanted to jump right in, she wouldn't. She's too careful. She's very careful. And then it's so weird and unexpected. Like, she's known him his whole life. Like, it's not like they just met at a convention and, you know, people were drinking or something. It's not like that. It's like this. So I was so nonplussed, by which I mean just puzzled by it. And I remember trying to kind of ask Jesse, like, so what does Jerry think of this? Like, this is this fabulous new plot twist, but I don't know what to make of it from my point of view. And he said, well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, he's a very charismatic person and he's a Roy, and, you know, he was telling me strategic reasons why Jerry could use the alliance. And I was like, no, I get intellectually why she would pause and figure out, she would take it seriously, but how does she feel about it? And I don't think he understood my question. It was sort of like, hey, that's why we hired you guys. You have to, figure that shit out. That's hard. That's too weird for me. And that's just his, I don't know, I might have him all wrong, but that's just his impression, my impression of him. And he does treat us like resources. Like, he kind of watches us for our, how, you know, what we like and don't like as the characters. It's interesting. It's a very, very collaborative show, much, much more so than anything I've ever worked on in a really satisfying way. But I remember I was sitting in the car. My car was parked in the street, and it was the day you had to move it for the street cleaning. And I was sitting there hoping to keep my spot. And I was talking to Michelle Matlin, who does the costumes, and we were talking about the scene where I make him go in the bathroom.
Roman, this is unacceptable. This is completely inappropriate.
Yeah?
What would your family say if they knew you were here?
Well, what would my family, Jimmy, fuck corn, and I don't care.
Yeah, but you do care.
No.
Yeah, I know you do. And they would be ashamed of you. And rightly so.
Okay, I'm very sorry, Jerry.
No, you don't get to speak. You have always been a disappointment, but this is just, you have gone beyond the pale.
I have?
Oh, yeah. You know what you are?
What am I?
You are a sick fuck. You are a sick fucking animal.
And at that point, it wasn't clear that I was wearing pajamas. She and I talked about it then. I think I suggested that because I just love pajamas. I do. I love pajamas. And I thought one of the things that's fun about the character for me, and I think for the audience, is she plays her cards so close to the vest, you don't know about her private life. So anytime, like, the idea of going into her guest room and she's in silk pajamas, like, oh, you know, like, weird, like, peek. But so anyway, I just said, I just have no idea how I feel about it. I don't know whether I'm supposed to feel titillated, repulsed, excited, scared. I don't know how to feel about it. And she just very calmly said, well, I expect that Jerry wouldn't know how to feel about it. So it was this really dumb, obvious acting equation. I was like, okay, it's you. You're in this situation. Kieran is cute. He's smart. He's funny. He's powerful as a character. And, you know, it is titillating, repulsive, scary, inappropriate, funny, dangerous all at once. And that I think that made a really interesting acting problem for me. That was how to just change on a dime. Moment to moment, be like, oh my God, horrified by him. And then kind of like, oh, let's see how far I can push this. Let's see how I can. And then like maybe a moment of a frisson of like maybe a little ripple of sexual excitement or interest. And then immediately like taking control of the situation. Like, I think her dominatrix element is sort of by accident, because I think she's just so grouchy and bossy with him that you know, that she's trying to tell him he's gross and that turns him on. And that's kind of like a shock to her. She's not doing it to turn him on until she catches on. So it was like, particularly that scene in the Turnhaven episode, I felt like I should have won some kind of like blue ribbon or something. Like for succession horses, like it was every micro beat of every little line flipped for Jerry. Like the world was spinning, like thinking on her feet. And it was the last scene we shot of that episode. And it was something like 3 a.m. when we got to it. Everyone was fried. They had to be out of the location. They knew that they had to pack up once we finished. So those of us who think about the crew and their needs, you can't help it. You're aware of it. You don't want to mess up your line. You want to get it right pretty quickly. You want to, you know, and all these were sort of hardships, but also kind of shook us into the moment. because we had to, like, you know, do it. And I kept saying to Mark Mylod, who's a wonderful director, I was like, I think that everything in her is saying, gross, no, stop it, cut it out. You're going to get us both in trouble. And that there's a little bit of like, it's a little fun to be the seductress if I could just sneak it in once in a while. And he was like, yeah, I think that's it. But then it really had to be broken down, like, into, as I've said already, in these micro beats. So it was really challenging. It's one of the most challenging things I've ever done.
Oh my God. As you said, Jerry is very careful. Jerry's very careful. Yeah. And my favorite scene of the last season was the finale when Roman comes to Jerry and he's basically asking her to help stop the merger. And she says, how does this serve my interest?
I'm focused on whatever outcome best serves the financial interests of the shareholders of the company. But it doesn't serve my interests. How does it serve my interests?
One, I will have that on a sweatshirt at some point in my life. But how, help us understand, how does staying at Waystar serve Jerry's interests?
Well, it's opposed to being where? Like,
as opposed, she is the most moral of the bunch. She knows, she sees, she has the bird's eye view. Many seasons back, she was the one who had to pull Kendall aside and be like, yo, you know, we're billions over leveraged. And like, so you, Jerry knows where all the bodies are buried. So does she stay there? Even though in her nature, it feels like working there would be repellent, but is it just too much of her DNA now?
I think that's very well put. I think it's very much in her DNA. I think she feels like she built a career there that's very good, because I think she flourishes when she's not in the line of fire. So that big responsibility that Kendall keeps trying to be of the spokesman and the frontman and the, you know, I think that is like, yeah, you do that. And I'll be quietly pulling the levers behind the curtain, because I think that's how she best achieves her goal. And I think that must be just really satisfying to her. And I think it's not nothing that she built her way up over maybe decades in that company. And she has this incredible salary and great, you know, homes and cars and everything you want. You know, like, she's made this, I think that's, it's not about where she's getting, it's about keeping her status, I think.
Right.
Because I think she likes what she has. I mean, it's a huge achievement. It seems to be female CEO. And, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. Like, you know, a lot of times it'll just be like someone who's in their 60s would get traded out for someone in their 40s or younger. I don't think she wants the idea of starting over at that age. And I don't think she wants to retire. So she has a lot of power. I mean, she seems to keep being the only person who knows she has all that power. Like, well, they don't know it, but I don't care. You know, power. And so I think, gosh, it is a little Iago-ish now that I think about it.
I mean, if you like convince someone to murder somebody at some point, then it's really on the nose.
Never say never.
I mean,
I don't think that Jerry's the most moral one. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd like to think that, but mm-hmm. I really would. And I think maybe she is something more of a human being than some other characters, like maybe has it within her. But I think what she is a strict to the letter of the law person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think when she accidentally seems to align with something moral, it's more that she's trying to keep them out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So you're like, she's like lawful evil. Sort of.
Right. Well, like, you know, like she's just going to defend her client using the law artfully, and she's not the judge. She's just there to represent her client. And I think there was the scene where we see into her apartment for the first time, the only time we have yet so far, when Roman calls, and that becomes the first sort of phone sex scene they have. It was the episode where there was a shooter that turned out to be a suicide. That was so interesting, such an interesting episode. And I said, you know, she should be home watching the news coverage, but she should be watching the Pierce news. She wants to see the real real news. And I thought in little ways like that, you would see some edge of her bias if she, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah, totally. Does Jerry even like the Roy family? Does she have any affection toward them at all? Or is it all just her following the law and doing what she's supposed to do?
Well, my knee-jerk reaction is to say that she really likes Logan and she really likes Roman. Mm-hmm. I think Roman, in the way that this is unfolded, I think it's so sad that she had to she had to part ways with Roman. Mm-hmm. Because I think in spite of everything, he's kind of got under her skin and she's, I don't know that they would ever see their way into actually having sex. But I mean, for many reasons, like, I don't know. I bet if Jerry were to turn around and say, okay, let's go, like he would have cold feet or something, something would go wrong. I don't know. But I think that in spite of everything, like this, she got this real affection for him. Like, mm-hmm. I think she's probably always wanted a protege and he has a lot of potential if he could just not be such a slimy, weirdo.
If he would just stop sending things.
Sending things and anything he thinks comes right out of his mouth. He's no, edit. He's no, so that's very opposite attracts kind of thing from Jerry, mm-hmm. who I'm very careful about choosing her words all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think her affection for Logan is just that they've been in battle together, like for so many right. years. And it's that sort of fondness of like, he's like this tough general and he is a sort of maverick and he goes rogue a lot and that's not her thing. And I think he's been politically and in a business way, like rewarded for his daredevil approach. And so I think she sort of admires that because it's like, that is not in her DNA, unless we were talking about, like, I think that that's like, she's like, okay, I don't get that, but that's this little thing, magic thing that sometimes Logan pulls off.
Right.
And so when push comes to shove, she's going to bet on his ability. Like in season one, when I taught, I don't remember which scene it was, but I remember saying to Kendall, like, no, the shareholders have bet on Logan's business acumen, not yours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No matter how we judge him and how you think he's a dinosaur and this and that, he's had this enormous success and he's this giant. So, and also, when I tell him we're in debt, I've dodged being in the it's the second episode, my first episode. They ask me to be interim CEO. Roman does. He has a scene where he's like, would you consider doing this? And I'm like, no, thank you. And my excuse is I don't want the job that makes your brain explode, like presumably what happened to Logan, like he has mm-hmm. had a stroke or whatever. I was like, no, thank you. And then I said to Jesse, I was like, so I don't have any ambition to do that. And he said, you don't want it when you're $6 billion in debt. take that fire. And I was like, duh, duh. So it's beautifully written because we announced them. And I go, I need to speak with you right away. We go up to the roof and I tell them how in debt we are. And I'm like, don't jump off. And that's the first time they ever established that thing of Kendall on the edge of jumping,
mm-hmm. right.
There's this motif through everything of him being on a precipice and feeling suicidal.
Mm-hmm. So we're not going to keep you for too much longer because I'm sure you have other things to do. Although we could sit here and chat all day. This is so fascinating. What do you do when you're not working to unwind? I know when I was like writing in TV, I couldn't watch TV shows because it would be like, I would think about work. Oh. So like, do you have that sort of thing? Or do you do something else to unwind?
Well, everything is so different because of the pandemic. Like the way I used to think of that, I was much more with people and outdoors and I'm not saying I'm outdoorsy particularly, but I would do things with people and be out and about and go to the theater and go to concerts. And I don't do that so much anymore because it scares me. I mean, I feel very feeling like it's our responsibility to be careful and all that, so I don't know. I mean, I actually have watched a lot of television more than usual because I grew up being a theater person, really. I would be in the, occasionally be in an indie film or something, but I did all this theater. And I was always in a play. Television has, in the meantime, exploded open into this cornucopia of choices. And it's made for all these niche things and people being able to write about all kinds of things for all kinds of audiences. And it's not as dumbed down. Like the fact that Succession is such a hit and it's such a smart kind of thoughty thing. Like you have to pay attention. And even I, who have read the scripts, if I watch something again, I always catch something else between... Mm-hmm. say Tom and Shiv or something that's not in my world that wasn't there when they shot it. And I'm like, wow, there's so much more than what was just on the page because mm-hmm. the actors have then added their, it's more than the sum of its parts is what I'm saying. Like something happens when you shoot it, as you know, if you, you know, but, so I find it, I have watched a lot of TV with my husband, and Kenny was never really, you know, he loved to watch TV, but he never wanted to write TV before, but he's, I think he's interested now because my husband's a writer. Mm-hmm. And we've really gotten into TV because of the side effect of COVID of binging everything.
Right. Well, you know? What have you binged most recently?
The Beatles documentary.
Hmm.
Oh my God. It's fantastic. I grew up like, you know, I grew up with the Beatles kind of, they were before my time a bit, but that Let It Be album, mm-hmm. I had that as a teenager, and like watching that documentary when they would have stills, and every once in a while you'd see the still from the album cover. I haven't looked at the album cover in years. I don't know where it is right now. And I'd be like, oh, that's on the cover. Like, mm-hmm. like grabbed little shots. Like it was so iconic to me when I was a kid. And that is so intimate. That have you guys watched it yet?
Not yet.
Oh my God, you're in for such a treat, because, and it's a feat of editing, because it was hours and hours and hours of footage. And so often the soundtrack is not what you're seeing. Like, so it's very artfully put together. Like you'll hear people talking here, but watch Paul, you know, playing, mm-hmm. playing around over here. You watch them basically write the song, Get Back. You watch it live happen. It's wild. And you watch the power politics between them at that point in time. And you can kind of see and turn everybody's point of view a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's the most fascinating thing. If you like music, if you like the Beatles, and if you are obsessed with human behavior the way I am, it's just an incredible thing to watch. Like, I can't wait to watch it again, in fact.
Really? Wow. A rewatch of a documentary is like it's a real endorsement for sure.
Well, you'll see. It's very unique. It's very, because it's just like the cameras on them, and it's like they're working. They're trying to write a song, and they're under some time pressure. Mm-hmm. So they're not as self-conscious. They're not that aware of the camera because it's just been kept running the whole time. So mm-hmm. it's one of those kind of documentaries where it's a lot mm-hmm. of really candid captures.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds great. I wish we could keep you around for the entire episode because this was such a fun conversation. Please come back, J. Smith Cameron. And we have to take a quick break. When we come back, personal political.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast for people who miss going to brunch and overhearing the table of educated professional women sitting next to them talking about nicknames they've given their cats. I am really excited to welcome our panelist guest co-host today. You know her. You love her. You can watch her 30-minute stand-up special on Netflix season 2 of The Stand-Ups. It's available now. It's so good. You can listen to her 2 podcasts, Couples Therapy and I Love a Lifetime Movie. She's also part of the new and final season of Search Party, as well as the mother of a small menagerie of beautiful animals. Welcome, Naomi Ekperigin.
That was the most stunning introduction I've ever received. I wasn't anticipating it. I assumed you were talking about Alyssa to start off, you know, and then to realize it was me, you know, like that was, you gave me a reason to wake up in the morning.
I was going to say, do you wake up in the morning? It sounds like you do so much stuff that like there's no possible way for you to get any sleep.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm not really a morning person, and I do believe I talk about it in the half hour. So I'm a little bit of a zombie, and we just thank Zoom for the touch up my appearance button.
Really? I can't even tell that it was like a touch up appearance button.
Yeah, honey, we smoothed it out just a little bit. Just a little
bit. I had no idea such things existed.
Wow.
Alyssa's a cool girl.
No, just unlearned, I think.
Naomi, there's a few things that you have worked on that I want our listeners to hear you talk about a little bit before we get into the topic today. I've heard the reception for your stand-up special has been really good. How has it felt to like get that feedback from people?
It is really nice. It is really weird. It's so funny because it's sort of this sense of a lot of people are kind of like, where have you been? Or what are you up to? Or you're funny. You know, and it's like, honey, welcome to the party. I've been out in these streets since 2008. Okay. I've been out here. So thank you. But it has been very nice, especially because you both know I was freaking out before taping it. So for it to like go well, because I was convinced at least part of the internet was going to be like, you're trash, go home. And that has not happened, which is huge.
Yeah. Wow, that's like a unicorn moment to not have people on the internet be like, you're trash, go home.
I mean, I'm sure they're saying it somewhere, but they're not saying it to me. And that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I would say that you killed so hard in your stand-up special that I don't know if people would have the audacity to come to you and tell you that they're like, that woman is unfuckwithable and I am not going to anything to her.
Yes. You've
joined the realm of the unfuckwithables. And then before we get to the topic, one more question. How's Maybelline?
Thank you so much for asking about how my daughter Maybelline is. She is still in remission from her mammary cancer. Okay, 6 months strong. She's actually just opened the door to where I was trying to record privately. And she is now pawing at my feet. And I said, well, you're going to have to hold it. You're going to have to hold it.
Well, that's great to hear. Remission.
Remission. That's what we sing in our house.
That's a great song, and I will be singing it too. Let's get to the topic today. We're going to talk about a pick-me. Urban Dictionary defines pick-me as a woman that is willing to do anything for male approval. She will embarrass or throw other women under the bus to achieve the goal. The unfortunate thing about a pick-me is usually the men that they're trying to seek approval from are of poor quality and treat women badly, leaving little real benefit for the pick-me. Naomi, have we seen this before? Is the pick-me a new phenomenon of the TikTok era, or is it a tale as old as time?
I believe a pick-me is a tale as old as time. And by old as time, I mean the 80s. Because do you remember so many movies that were about, like, a woman going undercover as a guy? To kind of, like, and almost in going undercover as a guy, she would win the love of the guy? You see what I'm saying? Because in a way, she kind of presented herself as like one of the boys. You know what I'm saying? Also, before we go any further, just to paint a picture for the listener, Alyssa is really giving us professor's office hours who doesn't have time to hear your shit because your paper's late. That is her energy right now. She is like very bundled, New England winter, but also just like, what happened to you? I don't care. And so I just wanted to just step that out, you know, because the listeners know. But now also, I believe the pick-me girl is it's a tale as old as time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alyssa, I wonder if, like, you've seen this before in a specific sense? Like, was there a name for it when you were growing up, a teenager, and in college?
Oh, you mean a guy's girl?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm a guy's girl. I don't really have many women friends.
And they don't know why. They don't know why.
They never understood why. And they're the ones that are just like super cool. Like in high school, they learned how to like roll their own joints. You know, they could tap a keg. They were like, oh yeah, I can show up early and help you tap the keg. And as you got older, they were the ones that would say things like, yeah, I don't know why. I just like have guy friends. And they would like really painfully, it's almost a caricature, talk about like sports, which you know they had got. I actually know women who would get up and like study sports so that guys would think that they were like super chill and cool and down, which like that's literally the opposite of being cool. Super chill and down.
Yeah, right? That is the least chill thing I've ever heard. You know, it's funny because there aren't really the reverse of the pick me. Like there are men who, you know, act foolish, but they're not like waking up in the morning and studying like the Real Housewives so they can have a conversation.
Correct.
Exactly.
And I wonder, like, you know, I was thinking about the pick me girl and how it's become sort of a trope, you know, a TikTok trope and, you know, like female dating strategy, which is that Reddit forum that is very, it's a super interesting read. I will say that. you know, they talk about pick me behavior and a lot of it just seems like self negating behavior, you know, pretending that you're not who you are. But I also think at the base of it is an assumption, and this is the sad part, I think, is an assumption that men actually don't like women. Like straight men actually don't like women at all. And so you have to act like a boy in order for, or you have to, you know, identify with like a guy in order for guys to like you.
Right.
Naomi, I wonder if you've, I mean, you're saying yes and right, so I wonder if you have anything to add to that.
I know for me, growing up, one of the things I tried to do so much, I didn't try to learn about, you know, stereotypically male things, but I definitely tried to not have emotions. I really, really was like, I'm going to be a girl who's like, I'm not going to freak out and no one's ever going to see me cry. Like every year, I don't know, maybe for like 3 years in a row, it probably would have been like seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade. I said at the start of the school year, I was like, I'm going to be a quiet girl. I'm going to be quiet. Like my resolution was to be quiet. And as you can imagine, it did not last long. but I thought that being that way, in essence, right, like sublimating myself, sanding down my edges, trying to make myself small would somehow make myself more attractive. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was, I just remember what I don't have necessarily a specific incident, but what I remember is a feeling of trying hard, like every part of my body tensed up, trying to convey a vibe that was not me at all, you know?
Yeah. I think I remember doing stuff like that too. I think I've talked about this on the show, but I dyed my hair blonde 1 year in college because I thought boys would like, I mean, I didn't dye it all the way blonde because that would have caused it to like fry off my head because my hair is very dark, but I got like blonde highlights and like thought it was, look, it was the year 2003, I believe.
Yeah. When we all got blonde highlights in some form or another.
We were still getting, you know, some of us were still going to tanning beds. I was going to college in Indiana. Tanning beds were still going on. I had a highlighted hair because I thought boys liked it. It wasn't because I wanted to have blonde hair. Uh-huh. It was because I thought that it was more attractive. And like looking back on that, you know, there's a lot of cringy behaviors that I think I exhibited growing up. And some of it comes from just wanting to be accepted just in general. And some of it comes from wanting to be accepted in a very specific way from guys. And I was thinking about the pick me as I was prepping for the show. And it sort of reminded me of this other kind of corner that intersects with politics of culture. It's like the trad wife. Alyssa, do you know the trad wife?
What's a trad wife?
It's a traditional wife. It's like a conservative.
Not me.
It's like a conservative lady who's like, you need to cook for your man and tell him he's great. Basically like, you know, advising women to act like the wife on a sitcom. Like married
to Phyllis
like,
Schlafly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I wonder if like working in D.C., like you encountered that or like if you see kind of that advice being slung around now, like in order to make a man happy, you just have to do everything he wants.
or to get a certain quality of man, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It was a little bit less about like, I think the undertone was about getting a man. I think the overtly, it was like, this is how you can be a professional, respectable woman, mm-hmm. you know, but there were like blogs that used to track what we wore.
What are
you
saying?
And we'd say how like we should be ashamed of ourselves. And like, it was really, I'll never forget because I'm so short. You guys know how short I am. And everyone I worked with was tall. And so I always wore flat shoes because if you're going someplace, you're like a fucking hamster in high heels if you're trying to keep up with gazelles, you know? And so there was this blog that would be like, it is a horrific embarrassment to the office of the president that these two women, myself and Nancy Ann DeParle, look at them in flat shoes, no pantyhose. Like, and if the sentence had kept going, it would be like, and you know they don't even make dinner for their husbands. You know, like that was the
right.
They don't know how to be put together. They don't know how to be like how to keep it together. And so that was, I always thought that that was like, you know, but yeah, I mean, of course, those women are like, there's like a whole Instagram of them. That's like, look how I'm like the perfect wife and mother. And it's like, mm-hmm. listen.
But then, of course, but here's the problem though. And this is what I can't stand about it. Cause it's the same thing about, again, that pick me version of like, let me tap the keg or what, or like, right. let me act like I'm not trying. What I can't stand about the perfect right. Instagram moms, it's always just like, our house is a mess, but it's ours. And it's literally a perfectly put together beige apartment and like one fleck of paint is on a child's cheek. You know what I mean? And it's like, what can I
do? A little washable marker. A little washable marker.
Exactly.
Right. And you know before those pictures are taken, they have like last looks. They're like, wait, everything is right? Like,
oh my God,
a little powder.
Did we just describe Hilaria Baldwin?
kind of.
Erin and I bonded over Hilaria. I
will say. Every time there's any news of Hilaria, I will text Naomi to make sure that she is abreast of the Hilaria news. I think that, yeah, it's interesting how like pick-me-ism or like doing things with the express intent of receiving male approval and attention. It's interesting how it evolves like prior to marriage and after marriage. And I think that that kind of speaks to this really destructive like set of expectations that women feel like they need to try to meet. So like before they're married, they're down, they're riding four-wheelers, they're, you know, they're doing whatever. I'm just thinking of like Mormon momfluencers and like that's the thing they would have done because they're not drinking, they're not tapping kegs, they're like eating desserts and four-wheeling and stuff. But like, you know, and then after marriage, it's like you go from being the like bro to being like the mommy. And there's no like actual sexual self-realized woman who wants what she wants mm-hmm. and pursues it. And that seems like, I don't know, it seems very sad to me. And I don't want to be like, I don't want to take away the agency of women who feel like they need to act in a certain way and put women down in order to fit in with men, because like that's a choice that they're making. But the reasons that they're making that choice kind of suck. And I sort of wish that they didn't exist.
I just wish, to me, sometimes what I think the biggest problem I have with it is this idea, you know, again, this pretending like you're not making the choice, pretending like you are not curating an identity.
Right.
That's what I don't like. That's like, well, I don't know why I don't have female friends. Yes, you do. Just say it. Be like, well, I really try to be a woman who's out here trying to get mine, and I can't be around other women who threaten that. Like, just mm-hmm. I would almost rather that. I'd be like, I keep homely friends around because it's good for my self-esteem. Like, just be that person. Or just say, like, right. I'm on a husband hunt, so I am trying to do things to get me a husband. The thing I think is difficult is, as you're saying, not just because you're talking about like a sexual identity in between, but it's also like, it seems like the only way out of being a pick me is to be a mommy. I think that's mm-hmm. the problem. Because if you get married and you don't have kids, you're expected to continue to four-wheel until the cows come
out. You're a party. You become a party aunt, but a pick-me party aunt who's nicer to her nephews than her nieces.
It's just like times when I'm like, Erin was a journalist because how quickly she comes up with a phrase. You know what I mean? She's like, pick-me-ism, a pick-me party aunt. And I'm like, okay, sure, this is what they are now.
I'm like a mint the way that I'm coining things.
You are.
I think that that's a really great point, Naomi, that like the mommy is the only way out, because it's also like, yeah, eventually you sort of get to an age where you sort of are not giving a man what he wants anymore because you're old. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, I don't mean that in a way, like, whatever. I don't think that like aging in any way takes anybody's value away. If anything, it increases their value and importance. But in the world of the pick me, like women lose value as they age. And I feel like, you know, there's an expiration date.
Is it that you lose your value once you've been picked?
Oh, maybe. Mm.
Like, is that the end of the line for the pick me girl? Once you've been picked, it's like, that's it. You've been picked. You got what you wanted now.
Well, but like in a way, I almost hope then, right? If that's the end of the line, I almost hope that in the pursuit of male attention, taking on all of these traits, learning these things, waking up early to learn about sports, I almost hope that you now believe all of it. You know what I mean? Like, I would rather you in this pursuit be like, you know what? I actually really like hunting. And it calms me. Like, I want that to be true for you. I want it to be now that you've done these things, that you are actually into them, and you're not just going through the motions for the response of, wow, I don't even know girls who like to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I want you to actually like it. I need you to love it.
Right. I think that's really interesting. And another thing that I think about when it comes to like pick me, I love that for the pick me girl to be like, I love hockey. I'm going to like pursue, you know what? I'm going to like start a blog about my favorite hockey team. And then it's going to get picked up by my local paper. Now I'm a columnist. Now I'm going on TV talking about this hockey team and it's a career and I've forgotten about all the men, you know, like that would be cool. But the thing that really is funny to me about like pick me-ism, or, you know, guys, girl, not like the other girls, you know, whatever, is that male attention is really not difficult to get. Like, it is very, very easy for a woman to get male attention.
I don't know. I don't know, Erin. I'm going to say this as somebody who is not like was not considered a conventionally attractive woman. To get the attention of like, depending on your type, right? And if your type is classic conservative or traditional male specimen, mm-hmm. those guys like a very specific type of woman.
Right. Totally agree. Right.
I'm talking about male, like, yes, that is a specific, you have to act, you have to dress up in a woman costume in order to like, in order to attract that exact type of guy. But also like, I'm talking about male attention in general.
Just
like,
period. That's not just the only. Hollering. Yeah,
that's
streets.
Not the only type of guy. And like, you know, I, you have a good point, Naomi, that, you know, there's specific conditions or a way that a woman can look that would make her less likely to get attention from men. But like, not all men, like the right kind of man, like the right kind of person will pay attention to you if you're a woman who is like interesting to them. You know, like there's, you don't have to.
But that is a faith that a lot of women don't have.
Yeah, you see? I agree.
Why do you think that is?
So in college, I made it to my junior, I guess it was my junior year at Madison. And I realized no one had ever asked me out in college, period, full stop. I never went on a date for 4 years, like, and I had these very beautiful friends and I sort of just accepted that I wasn't beautiful. I have other qualities, but I'm not beautiful. And so they were like, Alyssa, you're just not trying. And I was like, what does trying mean? So there I went to Urban Outfitters on State Street. Oh. I got the black booty pants. Remember those? The Fit and Flare?
Going out pants?
I had my going out pants on. I got some sort of iridescent shirt. Yes. I had lavender MAC eyeliner, like eyeshadow. I was like, all right, fine. I'm going to go for it. Naomi's feeling all of this.
I am. And
I went to Stillwater's the bar. And you guys, I will always and forever just be Mrs. Garrett on the Facts of Life. I'm like, all right, everybody. Come on, it's closing up. Let's pay the tab. You know, it's like, but in those years that I tried, and also my first couple of years in New York City, I tried. I wore things that I would not normally pick to wear. And I was like, you know what? I'd rather die alone than put on another tank top from Bebe with my like sandbag boobs and no bra. Like, I would just rather die. And so, but I did for years. I think for years I was like, I was not a sort of caricature, I think. But I definitely tried to wear things that I thought men in bars might notice and talk to me. And I can tell you, up until I met my husband, we went out to dinner, and then afterwards we met people, and he bought me a drink, and I was like, I think this is the first drink a man's ever bought me. He's like, stop it. And I was like, no, I'm dead serious. And so, like, you understand where the pick me mentality can come from.
Yeah.
It's just whether or not you can see the forest through the trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Alyssa, to be fair, I think you give off a vibe of a person who's like, if she wanted a drink, she would have a drink. There is no need for me to tell
her. I don't disagree. That's a hard thing to see though when you're 20.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Because right. you didn't know that at 20 that you were giving off that energy. Right.
And that's good energy to give off.
At that point, the best Valentine's Day of my life was when I got my fake ID taken away from me 2 weeks before Valentine's Day. And I had to spend it alone. And I went to the movies and saw Jerry Maguire, and I was like, oh my God, that was so much better than being at the bars.
Well, that's a thing that often gets thrown at women who don't try to act pick me enough. You know, like, you're gonna, you know, if a woman is like comfortable living by herself, comfortable having like five cats or five dogs or no pets at all, a gerbil, a parakeet, whatever, like, or just, you know, just living alone, traveling by herself, not interested in like dating or wasting her time with someone who doesn't meet her standards, like, they always get like, you're gonna die alone. Mm-hmm. You're gonna die alone with cats. Would that really be bad? And I'm saying that as a married woman with a child. Like, I'm happy with my life, but like, before I met Josh, I had gotten to a point where I was like, I could be fine like this forever. Like,
and that's That's when they find you. I'm convinced the moment you, because it's not simply stop looking, right? Because people always say, when you stop looking, no. Mm-hmm. I believe stop a trying. Man can sense when you don't give a fuck, okay? And he suddenly smells it like a hormone. It's like, hey, girl. I see you over here loving yourself. Can I buy you a vodka cranberry and ruin your life? That's what they want. That's what they want. They can sense it.
And it always starts with a vodka cranberry.
Hello.
I think it was actually like a ginger beer and Jameson was the
okay,
drink.
That feels right. You know, a little Jameson. Because you kind of are a little bit of a cool girl, Erin, because of your Midwestern life.
No. That was given to me by Josh. That was like not a. Oh, I didn't go to the bar.
Okay.
No, I drink beer, and I don't like to brag about it because I don't want people to think that I'm like,
oh, pick me.
Well, especially because, but exactly what you said though, it's like, why would anyone even quote unquote brag? It's like, cool brag? Do you see what I'm saying? The idea that like beer then becomes like, beer becomes a representation of who you are as a person.
Right.
And that I think is the part we're talking about where it's just like, drink what you drink, do what you do, but don't be like, okay, guys, I know it sounds crazy, but I'm into IPAs. And that sounds wild.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like, I think part of the pick me thing that's like irritating is how completely taken by themselves they are, or how completely, you know, it's like, it's almost as though, and I, this is going to be real mean, but you see it a lot on Instagram, like, or social media, people posting as though they are a person in love with them posting, you know, like they, you know, post pictures of themselves, like in this sort of like, you know, dead wife montage, you know, like lit angelically and like, or, you know, in a field of flowers or whatever. And it's like, wow, you know, you're posting this as though you're trying to invite someone to like, be like, wow, isn't she great? Isn't she the greatest person ever? And there's like this, in order to like present as a pick me, you almost have to like understand, you have to like advertise the things you think will make people fall in love with you. And like that they're quirky. Like, oh, like you just said, Naomi, like the beer thing. Oh, I love IPAs. Isn't it weird? And it's like some guy who's like, I'm looking for a woman who loves IPAs is going to like hone in on her. Alyssa, Naomi brought up something that I thought was interesting about how men can tell when you don't give a fuck anymore. Like,
yeah,
that's a widely known thing. I know a ton of people who have like met their long-term partner when they were like, you know what? This is fine. Why do you think that pick me perseveres in light of the fact that a higher quality person will find you when you're comfortable with yourself?
The pick me, okay, so you have to think about it. The pick me is living a narrative they've created, right? Mm-hmm. Because the pick me can have all kinds of like likes, dislikes, like it's, they are cultivating the image of the person they want to reel in. So it's really not about the fact that one of us will find the person that we're meant to be with when we're acting like ourselves. It's that they don't want that person necessarily. They want the person they've created in their head. Mm-hmm. And so that is the person they're trying to get. And when they get that person, that's when they stop. But they're not trying to find, like, if one of these pick-me's, what a funny thing. It's like, it sounds like a flower. Mm-hmm. One of these pick-me's isn't looking for the love of their life necessarily. They're looking for the person that's going to fulfill the things on their Pinterest board.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And so that's why I think that they continue to thrive.
Well, mm-hmm. I also think that it's also, again, pick me, there is a level of control in this process, right? If you think, okay, I can get a person by doing these things, it gives you a lot more control than just, I'm supposed to just walk around looking half decent and hope someone cares. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I will say this, like, the way I dress to go out in a relationship and also a relationship that's steady. I mean, after like year four, the way I dress to go out now is nothing like the way I used to dress when I was trying. You know what I'm saying? Like what Alyssa was saying, but also just that sense of, it is specifically like, I have no reason to impress anybody. I want nobody to approach me. I'm not going out with a sense of hope that something could change. I'm just out here, okay, having a canapé, and I'm dressed accordingly. And that is because I don't need anything from this interaction, right, or for this socializing. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when you decide to be, you know, a pick-me girl holding a bouquet of forget-me-nots, you are not just looking for a certain person and trying to live a narrative, but, like, you are trying to control this process.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah. And I think sometimes being disingenuous is another way to control. Like, because if you are acting, if you're trying to craft a self that is separate from your actual self, then the person who falls in love with that self isn't really breaking up with you. They're breaking up with the creation that you made. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
God, you guys, I feel like we just got to the bottom of the entire 90 Day Fiancé franchise.
Well, that also has to do with poverty. Okay.
I know.
It's both. It's both, you know? But it is like, what? It is like, oh God. I mean, to me, I always, you know, kind of thought, I think I stopped faking it when I realized how hard it was to fake. Cause I was like, it'll be bad if I get someone who wants this. Cause I don't mm-hmm. know how long I can sustain this.
Right.
And so I just kind of stopped, you know, the whole shy and quiet and whatever. And it's like, this is it. Take it or leave it, you know? And a lot of times they take it and then leave it. You know, that was New York City for you. That was New York City for you. But yeah, it took a long time to figure that out, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think figuring it out is an important, like, part of growth. So there's a part of me that thinks that, like, you know, poking fun at pick-me-ism is a little, it's fair, but it's also a little bit unfair because a lot of these people are just learning what they want and what they don't want. And they're just trying to fit in a place that feels kind of hard to fit in if they don't know the answer key to it. And I also have found that, as with like anything that singles out women, I found that sometimes people use it as an excuse to be like misogynist in their own way. Like men who complain about pick-me's, it's like, well, why don't you complain about the men that can't see through a person who's faking their entire personality? You know,
right.
Like, you know, the reason that a pick-me act is ever effective is because like the men they're trying to impress are idiots.
Right.
You know?
Right. Why do you, so not just that, right? But like the men who want a woman who is exactly like them, basically, who's like, I want a woman who's going to sit next to me while I watch a sporting event. Mm-hmm. Really? Go get some friends.
Like, totally.
Like, nothing I love more. Like, Andy and I, again, and he's not traditionally mask, okay? And whenever he does something masculine, like, he got weights and he's, like, exercising. And then he'll joke, he'll go, will you love me when I'm buff? Will you love me when I have muscles? You know, like, it's, like, not. However, there's nothing I love more than having separate things. You know what I mean? Like, you have this thing you really like and you go off and do. And then, like, you come back rejuvenated. You've had fun. You've gotten your energy out. Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The idea of having to be the person who partakes in all of that feels like a lot of extra work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, you know, there's specific things that I know that I like that Josh will never like because they are objectively stupid. Like, I love watching like the first two or three weeks of every season of The Bachelor or Bachelorette because I like the spectacle. I like the parade of like producer prompted stunts. I like the person riding in on a camel and like, you know, I like all that stuff. And it's so dumb, but, and I know Josh will never like doing it, but when like, I also have a Joe Millionaire in our DVR right now. And I have been like waiting for a night that like I don't have to do any work. Juniper is sleeping and Josh is elsewhere.
Yes.
Because I want to watch it on the big TV. I want to watch the first episode of fucking Joe Millionaire on the big TV. And that's not ever going to be anything that we do together. I'm never going to sit there and listen to Josh's Pittsburgh sports podcast that he listens to 24/7 as a way to calm down, even though it's like men complaining about imaginary outcomes. Like that is like, I'm never going to like that. And I think that he understands that like, I love us doing separate things. And if I had been like gotten with Josh because of pick me-ism, I would be stuck listening to like,
you listen to that podcast every single day. Yeah.
They all sound like they're eating sandwiches as they're talking. Like,
yeah. And talk about shrill. Yeah. It's true. Those sports podcasts. My husband listens to them in the bathroom through the bathroom speakers. So, of course, I can hear it throughout the house. And I'm just like, oh, my God, are you deaf? Like, what is that? And it's like, no, that's just how loud they speak.
Oh, God.
It's like men on Zoom. You know, it's like they can't hear you. Like, the sound isn't transferred from you yelling to recipient of your Zoom call. But, yeah, I think ultimately what the pick me conversation does is like expose this sort of like completely fucked up dynamic between a lot of hetero people. Like there's a lot of men who really should just consider fucking their friends if they want to. They exactly. want to be with a, if you want to be with a guy, be with a guy's guy,
right,
you know?
Right.
You know, that's fine. This is the year of our Lord 2022. Like there is no judgment whatsoever. And if you live in a place where there is judgment, you can move to like the nearest city and there will not be judgment, you know? And I think that like, you know, there's nothing helpful in being a woman who feels the need to like differentiate herself from other women by wearing a like, I don't know, this is going to date me, but like wearing a Von Dutch hat. And
like, well, I was going to say a foam finger. So I see, thought you were much cooler.
I was going to say dressing like Eddie Vedder. So we've all revealed our age.
Oh, yeah. Man, Eddie Vedder. You know what? I have a theory of Eddie Vedder. I think that he wrote music like from like a female gaze perspective, G-A-Z-E, not G-A-Y-S. Like he writes music that women want to hear men sing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean.
And so like men were like, I wish I could sing this to the woman that I love. And women were like, I wish my man would sing this song to me.
And I just, my hair looked like his when I didn't blow it dry.
I think that's the grunge look is just like.
It was 93.
It's like drip drying, you know?
Yeah.
You got to drip dry. It's coming back. It's coming back in style. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we've got an I Feel Petty.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the Savings Challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome back. We have an I Feel Petty segment to get to, but before we do that, a little bit of housekeeping. We are opening up our inbox for nominations for Fuck That Guy. If you have somebody who deserves to be called out, send us a 30-second voice memo at hysteria@crooked.com. Just a reminder, anybody can be a guy, a woman can be a guy can be a guy, a child can be a guy if they're a public figure. Just make sure your Fuck That Guy nominees are public figures and let her rip. Okay, house has been kept. Time for I Feel Petty. I feel petty about something this week, guys. It's a big issue that has a petty thing inside of it, okay?
Oh, yeah. That's the theme of mine, too.
Right. It's like a petty eclair. You know, the filling the filling is what we're going after. Okay. So Joss Whedon, the creator and writer of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Firefly and Dollhouse and I think a couple of the Avengers movies, big-time Hollywood writer, did an interview with Vulture this week that was supposed to be redemptive. So Whedon had been accused a few years ago of kind of being shitty to women, not like Weinstein-level shitty, but like, you know, like bad boss, sexually inappropriate, that kind of level of shitty, you know, sleeping with people who are below him on the totem pole, et cetera. And so I feel like this interview was supposed to make him He thought it was going to make him look good, but it ended up being one of those celebrity profiles where the writer just kind of let him talk and wrote down what he said and like didn't inject any opinion whatsoever. And the whole thing reads as the writer is very neutral. But when you get done with it, you're like, wow, what a dick. You know, he really looks bad. And which is really disappointing because I, you know, he's like the type of person that before all the allegations came out, you're sort of like, I'm rooting for him. You know, he wrote strong female characters. He was really interested in having women front and center in the work that he did. But then, you know, all the bad stuff came out. So here is my I feel petty. When I read that profile, I thought, you know, if you're somebody who's planning on getting very famous, Naomi, you have to keep somebody around you who is constantly busting your balls, who you cannot fire. You have to have somebody that is going to like pop your balloon, bring you down, tell you that you have to work harder. Not necessarily someone who's going to neg you all the time, but somebody who is going to be a reality check. Because I feel like a lot of these people who just, they start to feel like they're gods and they're beyond reproach and nothing bad can happen to them. And I feel like if they just had a person who was around being like, you can't do that. Nope, you're not the greatest writer of all time. You're not a god. You're not a, you know, you don't get to sleep with actresses just because they're around and you were a nerd when you were a kid. Like, no, stop it. They need a reality check person around all the time. So to anybody out there who's planning on becoming fabulously rich and famous, find somebody who is always going to take you down a notch.
And that, because, for me, is Alyssa.
And that... Nay, thank you.
Alyssa, who's yours? Who's your take you down a notch person?
Oh, God. My sister, 100%. She's just there is nothing. Like when she either came to my book events or like anything she ever does, she'll be like, you know, it's crazy, right? That these people came to see you. And I was like, yeah, I do. It's cool. She's like, okay. She also kept me humble when she wore my regular size clothes in her 8th month of pregnancy. But...
Rude.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I would say, you know what? Speaking of kids, children will keep you humble. You just keep a kid around, they're going to be like, that doesn't look good on you. Like, they'll just tell you things.
Oh, my niece? She'll be like, wee, you don't have friends. I was like, Yes, I do. Wee-wee, you have friends? Like the face all squunched up. Wee-wee, really? And then like an hour later, she comes back. Wee-wee, you have friends? I was like, cool, you're welcome for wrapping all your Christmas presents. The ones not from Santa, of course, in case she ever listens.
When she's like seven, she's going to be like, wait a minute.
She's going, wee-wee, where's Santa? And Alyssa, she does speak at me aggressively like that.
And also calling you wee-wee. It's like a lot. Me wee-wee. It's a real power move, the whole thing.
I mean, everyone calls me wee-wee in my family, so it's okay.
Oh, my God, because you're so short?
Because I always have to pee.
Oh, well, you also speak French. You could have said, because I speak French.
Oui, oui. Yes, yes, I could have. But I'm telling you the truth, which is that since the sixth or seventh grade, I've been called Wizzy or Wee Wee because I always had to pee.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Okay, Alyssa, speaking of you, what do you feel petty about this week?
So here's what I feel petty about, you guys. I woke up this morning. I have not been sleeping. I've been waking up in the middle of the night very hot. And then I can't fall back to sleep. And so I try to do things like put on the Calm app and listen to Harry Styles. But sometimes I go on the internet and I found this article. And I guess I just feel like if you're going to write an article, there has to be something actionable in it. If it is as follows. Title. Women 32% more likely to die after operation by male surgeon, study reveals. So I read this whole article about a study done in the UK, and I just want to read you the first two quick sentences. Women who are operated on by a male surgeon are much more likely to die, experience complications, and be readmitted to hospital than when a woman performs the procedure, research reveals. Women are 15% more liable to suffer a bad outcome and 32% more likely to die when a man rather than a woman carries out the surgery, according to a study of 1.3 million patients. What the fuck are we supposed to do with that information? Right. What is that supposed to do other than terrify us? Like, when I got into my car accident and they took me in the ambulance to the ER, it's not like I could be like, is there a woman? But now if anything ever happens to me, this is all I'm going to think about. This is all I'm going to think about. And I just feel like, I'm sure this is real. I'm sure we probably knew it. You know, like I'm sure in our heads we're like, you know, we probably have a better chance if a woman gets in there. But no. And so now anyway, I read this and I really didn't go back to sleep. And I was like, you have to be fucking kidding me. And I went through my head and I'm like, all my doctors are men. Except my gyno. But that's it.
When I went to the hospital to have Juniper, I requested that only women like do cervical checks and like work on me with the birth. Cause I just don't I'm sure there's fine male gynecologists. I just don't want them around me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there was a sign I noticed after I left in my like wheelchair to go see her. There was a sign on my door where I gave birth that said no men.
That's awesome. Oh, that's my God. Awesome.
Erin, do you have a picture?
No,
because that is like that's hysteria in a nutshell.
Well, we've been thinking about letting like a man on that's like he's with us kind of a dude, you know. Yeah. But
a pick me guy.
A pick me guy. The one pick me guy. But yeah, no men when I was like in the whole birthing thing, except the anesthesiologist who gave me the epidural was a man.
Well, you can trust like, him to knock you out. He didn't want to hear
your mouth.
Yeah,
he had to be in and out. He was like, do what you got to do and be gone.
Yep, exactly. All right, Naomi, do you have a I feel petty for the week?
It's so funny because I am like filled with rage and there's just so many things swimming in my head. But I'm not going to talk about fear fatigue vis-a-vis COVID. What I'm going to talk about is people who say to me, people who, you know, when they find out I'm a comic or people who have seen The Half Hour, what's interesting now, people who go, good for you. That's good for you. You're like, there is something I hate so much about the phrase good for you. It is so condescending and it implies like, look at you, lady talking. Good for you, lady talker. You decided to go talk professionally and they're letting you? Good for you.
The for you part.
Yes, it's the for you, right? Like it is, and especially like, you know, and that's different than you're so brave, which I don't love, but I also get it for people who really find public speaking to be terrifying. You know what I mean? Like, I get how some people can say that. But that good for you is something that just feels like you don't get to decide what is a worthwhile profession, what is a lark for somebody, you know, what you think is outlandish or wacky. Good for you. Good for you. It's, you see what I'm saying? They go up, good for you. It is an octave, okay? Like, they have gone up top and then they take it down low. And I find it really, really condescending and just like, leave me alone or just don't say anything. Just don't say anything. You know?
What about love that for you? Love that for you.
Love that for you is very funny to me because I say that a lot because it's for something that I think is insane. But if you enjoy it, I'm like, love that for you. That sounds psychotic, but I love that for you. Like when someone's like, oh my God, like we went hiking for 2 hours this morning. I'm like, love that for you. You know?
So good for you. Don't tell Naomi that because she'll get mad at you.
It's condescending. It makes
me sad. Unless someone says it like, good for you.
Good for you.
Like,
no,
you got
that's
it.
Just an old lady's version of good for you. No, that's the same thing. It is a little like very like, put yourself out there, dark woman. It's just like, I don't like it. I don't like good for you. I don't like good for you.
You literally, the way you say good for you is literally how I talk to all of my cats. You just say, good for you. Good for you. Oh, Winky, you fetched the ball. Good for you.
That's why you don't say it to a person. Like,
exactly.
You say it to like a tiny animal or a small child, but with not an adult woman with a half an hour stand-up special on Netflix that our listeners can watch whenever they want because it is on demand.
It is. And you know one last thing I feel petty about?
What?
Naomi, where's your 60-minute special?
Well, honey, we got to be adding Netflix as a joke on all the social platforms.
That's what we're going
to do. Because I think that's what has to happen. I'm dying to know how many people watched it. And of course, I could never know that. And it's like, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Ted Sarandos will decide. And I'm like, Ted, you already have a black wife and you've also made questionable choices. So why don't you get on board?
Guys, I think we solved some real problems.
I think we brought people together. And I would also like the record to show that Juniper has also watched my half hour. So there's no excuse for anybody else who hasn't done it, okay? There's somebody who's literally new to the world who is like, what's hot? What's happening? What do I need to know?
Exactly.
And then she watched it.
She did. She got dressed up for it, too. She wore a jumpsuit.
Hello. Hello, a queen.
All right. That's all the time we have for this episode of Hysteria. Thank you, Alyssa, for being my ride or die. Thank you, Naomi, for being amazing and coming by this week. Thank you to J. Smith Cameron for her performance as Jerry on Succession. And thanks to all of you, the listeners. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. I am from another planet. This nation, fuck Janet. But these girls got a fan it. Y2K email and scan it. Don't take no for an answer. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis are the sound engineers, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you to our digital team, Nara Melkonian, Nia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroot.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.